Welcome to the Traffic Masters Show. Each week, Traffic Masters explores the lifeblood of your business, generating traffic, turning visitors into leads, and conversion strategies. Mastering traffic and conversion allows you to grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Traffic Masters here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your co-host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsuniversity.com. Calling in live this week from beautiful sunny Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We have my co-host, Jack Humphrey, the Associate Dean at Directions University, calling in from Richmond, Indiana. Hello, Jack.
Hello. We've got a good one today.
We do, but I don't know where he is.
Uh-oh. Well, I will speak for Tom Bell if I have to, but I don't think he's going to like it if I do.
Too funny. I'm going to go see if I can reach him on the phone. So you keep talking while I do. I'll be back in a minute.
All right. So, man, oh, man, a lot of good stuff going on this week. Hopefully everybody checked out my blog post at jackhumphrey.com. Just click on the latest one, talking about deep leverage, something that Gina and I do, something I learned from Gina after years of doing leverage the way I thought leverage should be done. I found out there's a more powerful way to do it and a more powerful way to think about your business and how you get results. And so I can set that up by saying this. If you think that all anybody's really doing out there to generate traffic and get new leads and customers is all the basic stuff that everybody talks about and what it feels like everybody's doing, they're out on Facebook, they're out on different social channels, they're paying for boosting their posts, they're paying for ads, they're doing joint ventures like you mail for me, I'll mail for you, all of that stuff. If that's what you think marketing is, if that's what you think everybody else is doing, in a way you'd be right, because that's what most people know about. That's all they know. But there's a group of people who are doing things in a far, far different way. And that's what I discuss in the article on deep leverage at jackhumphrey.com. So check it out, please, because I think it's going to really, really help a lot of people to understand there's some really cool stuff going on. And, again, I give Gina full credit for what I expose in the article, because I really refined what I know about leverage when I started working with her. And so if you want to know how somebody becomes the JV queen and who is able to pay off $40,000 a month in medical bills, I mean, you know, to stay alive, you got to develop something a little bit more meaty, and a little bit something you can sink your teeth into a little bit more than what everybody seems to be doing out there. And then finally, the general idea that if you think you're doing what you need to be doing for your company to get more clients, to get more sales, is just what everybody else seems to be doing, then you're making a mistake. And you really need to know what people are doing to apply leverage, a smaller portion of people, and than the whole. But it's a night and day difference between what, you know, you might be doing right now and the results that you could be getting with your business. One little article on a blog. Can you believe it?
Jack, guess who I found?
Where was he?
He was trying to get in.
Where did you find him? Was he at Subway?
He's trying hard to get in. Hello, Tom Bell. Well, now, where did he go? Hang on. I had him.
Rumor.
Let me go get him back. Hang on.
It's hard to fit a whole Tom Bell into your show, so he's probably just trying to squeeze into Traffic Masters right now. Tom Bell is a big man. Not a big man, but a large persona. If you see him in the wild, you don't want to look at Tom Bell in the eyes directly. He sees it as a challenge. He will protect his cubs.
I really have him this time, for sure.
He's not a pigment.
Yeah, there he is. Hey, Tom.
Hey, is this Jack?
This is Jack. How you doing?
I am good. How are you two?
I'm so excited about having you here.
Yeah,
it's been a while, hasn't it?
Let me get the official introduction out of the way, and then we can get down to real business, all right?
Perfect.
So, I don't know how many people on this, listening to this now, don't know who Tom Bell is, but I'm going to go ahead and give an introduction for the four people left that don't. Tom has seen it all in his 48 years, everything from having to eat from dumpsters as a homeless man on the streets of New York to earning millions and dining with diplomats on G7 summits in Beijing. Often called upon by the top gurus for marketing advice, Tom has never been in a niche he didn't dominate. I can attest to that. Earning over $120 million over the years with his offers, at last count, his paid book buyer count was north of 1.4 million buyers, and he's overseen about that many clicks over the years, except you need to add three zeros to that. It's actually 1.5 billion with a capital B and still counting. If you were to ask him how he did it, he might not even be able to say. He made over 2 million online before buying a single training manual. He writes all his sales copy, his own sales copy, and designs some truly unique sales processes. In short, Tom is a very good guy to listen to if your goal is to make money online. Now, Tom, you must live up to all of this hype. Welcome.
Oh, God, that's going to be tough. It's a good thing that most of that was true.
Yeah, I embellished a little. You can look Tom in the eye. He doesn't see that as a challenge. That's the part that I lied about.
Jack, have you ever heard the story of how Tom Bell got started in marketing?
I sort of have, but it's been a long time. I think I need a refresher. Let's do that.
Would you mind sharing that, Tom?
No, there's actually, I'll give you the prehistoric version. How about that? That one might
be
new.
That'd be awesome.
Okay. Gina, we haven't run into each other in a few years. But this memory only came back about 2 years ago. And I was on the streets homeless in New York City, and I had my dog with me. And I remembered back then, I didn't even put this together until lately, I had a homeless sign because, you know, I was begging for money on the sidewalk on 33rd Street. And it occurred to me that each day I would write a new sign for homeless, and I would, you know, test which sign would bring me more money. So, yeah, I was split testing homeless signs back in when I was 19, 20 years old.
Wow.
But, it went from there to eBay. And so one day, I guess it was in 1996, I was selling toy helicopters in Indiana, and it started raining on my toy helicopter. So I turned to the person next to me and said, you know what, I quit. I'm starting an internet company. Now, the neat thing about that was I didn't own a computer. I didn't know how to use a computer. So I went out and bought a computer, and I was experienced with the flea market business. So I said, where's the flea market on the internet? And that was, of course, eBay. And serious flea marketers always buy the most expensive spot they can find. So that would be featured auctions. And I didn't know the first thing about anything, but I did see that, I mean, back then, you could look at all of eBay on a single search. It was still small enough that you could do that. So I looked for all the featured auctions, and then I looked for something called Dutch auctions, which I'm not even sure if they do those anymore, where they're selling multiple of an item, and that ruled out, you know, grandma's wedding ring. So it had to be something that somebody had a lot of. And there were, you know, there were people selling, you know, large amounts of things. So I took out everything but the auctions that were ending today. And that told me, you know, what the final price, what the real value of an item was. And that left thousands of items. And then I looked for things that I knew I could find wholesale. Because I was in the flea market business, I had connections in China. So it boiled down to a product called the cell phone antenna booster. And it was just science. I was seeing what was selling. And that yielded me a list of, I believe it was 12 different vendors successfully selling this one product, this cell phone antenna booster. And I think the miracle of all miracles was this one idea, is on this list of 12, there was somebody selling, there was a number one, and there was a number 12 on this list. So I wrote my auction, or my sales letter, if you will, and I said more of what number one said and less of what number 12 said. And to make a long story very short, we did $600,000 in 4 months.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun.
Nice. I remember those things.
Great.
You stick them on
story.
The inside or outside of the phone. Yeah, when everybody was talking about radiation sickness from your phone.
Yep. And, you know, looking back on it, you know, we can joke around and say, look, it was a sticker. At one point I got a long letter from a guy in the Army Corps of Engineers explaining in great detail why and how that thing worked. I had no idea.
And eventually...
Oh, that's great. I thought you were going to say he was going to explain in detail why it didn't work. So that's awesome. Somebody would take the time to do that. That's cool.
And eventually, you got into a business selling a little ebook about how to get grants from the U.S. government. And in the process of doing that, you started doing something very unique that you call Gateway Pages. I want to tell that story because I really want to talk about the Gateway Pages.
Perfect. Gina, I want to do a satire on the marketing industry. Are you ready?
Oh, that would be awesome.
It's so cool because, you know, most people, you know, are cynical and they figure that you know how the actors go around and pitch their movie when it first comes out?
Yep.
I can promise to all the callers that Gina nor Jack has any idea what's about to get said. But it's cool and ironic because I'm going to talk about what we did then, and then I'm going to say this. It's coming back. It's coming back very soon. So what we did back then was, a lot of people may not be old enough to remember this guy, but Jack and Gina, do we all remember the Matthew Lesko, the guy with the question marks on his suit?
Absolutely.
I'm wondering if you're responsible for him now and unleashing
world. There's a little story behind him. He at the time, he was the second most recognizable marketing character in the world behind Ronald McDonald. We locked him out of the internet for 6 years. While we were there, he couldn't even get on the internet to sell his books. But we sold a book called The Today I Can Grant Guide, and we sold it successfully at first. And then I was on the phone with we made our first $2 million before, I figured I better buy a book and get better at this marketing thing. The first book that we bought, and I won't mention the guy, but he was popular, and I took his advice, and it cut my conversion in half. So then we bought a book by Marlon Sanders, and that helped. And Marlon and I are good friends now. So I was on the phone with another consultant, and he shows me this newfangled website where they asked for people's email address right there on the website. It wasn't even a landing page then. And I said, you know what? That's a good idea. I'm going to ask for people's names and make a special page just to collect that email address. And the consultant said, that's not possible. It's impossible to do that. So I had my coder, come up with this tiny little page that asked people for their name and their email address. And then I showed it to the consultant, and he was shocked. And then I said, now we're going to put that name on the sales letter that comes after the landing page. So instead of hello, friend, it turned into hello, Gina. Doubled our conversions. So that was the birth of, you know, as nearly as I know, the modern landing page. So a couple of weeks later, we said, well, we're selling grants, and a lot of people want grants for different reasons. So why don't we ask them why they want a grant on the landing page, or the gateway page, as we called it back then, and then customize the sales letter based on their answer. And again, the consultant said, well, that's not possible either. Well, a week later, we did it, and we doubled our conversions again. So a four-fold increase in conversions when you're selling 700 or 800 units a day is a really, really good thing. So in a nutshell, we back in 90, I think it was 97 or 98, we were customizing the sales letters based on answers that people gave on the landing page. And the bombshell that about three people in the world know now is we're building some software to do that again, except we're going to do it in a new field that's evolved since 1996 or 97, you know, video.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So you heard it here first. Custom VSLs that call you out by name.
Well, the reason that Tom and I even know one another as well as we do, Jack, is several years ago, as I was still a JV broker back then, Tom came out with a product called Gateway Magic, and it was the first derivation of software that made it possible for people to create gateway pages so that they could ask for a name, an email address, and then an answer to a simple survey question. We were seeing people using Gateway Magic that were getting 3,000% improvement in their bottom line. I mean, the numbers were crazy, weren't they, Tom?
Yeah. And you know what blows my mind, Gina? The evolution of the Internet is, I mean, back in 96, 97, they weren't even calling some of these, companies CPA networks. Well, they weren't calling any of them CPA networks.
Right.
And between 97 and 2002, people were making money so fast that everybody stopped using Gateway, including me.
Yep.
And I really haven't seen custom sales pages, in a big way. I haven't seen it since I did it. I mean, there's been people using it, but, you know, we've kind of walked away from it for a while, I think.
I think so, too. I've been looking.
Well, I remember Evan Pagan came out with something in the mid-2000s, and everybody thought, because nobody remembered, you know, at that point, or a lot of people didn't remember, there was a bunch of new people on the web since you did it, that he was creating fire, that he would, show us how to make these landing pages that, depending on all of their answers, and it would get all chunked out in the sales letter. It was kind of a nice little system. And I think a lot of people would probably, if they remember back that far, would say, no, Evan Pagan's the one who invented this. But everything is so cyclical in this business. And also, the other thing is, we get tired of things really quick. And that should never have stopped being used. That should never have fallen out of favor, because what's more appealing today in this world than when you install an app on your phone and it addresses you, it addresses your situation, it keeps track of your stuff. If you just simple things like playing a game, when you log back in, it knows where you were, and it says hello, and it has your username, and it's all this really comfortable stuff that it knows me. It knows where I am in the world now with GPS and location services, and we know that we like that. We know people really, really like that. But if you go to a typical gateway page now, it's give me your name and email, and I'm going to talk to you as a generic nobody. And that's 99.9%, including a lot of our stuff. We don't have any of that kind of customization, and I'm just as puzzled as you. Why? Why don't we use the stuff that did those incredible things, like 3,000% increase in conversion? And since nobody's doing it, it's just like the old days when nobody was doing it then, and then you were.
I agree. And, I do have a conspiracy theory about it. I think it was 99. I'm really, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but the more I think about it, it might be real. I think it was 1999 when Microsoft released their version of Office with that damned paperclip that claimed to know you.
Oh, God.
You remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, they used to have websites. Back when websites were hard to build, they used to have hate websites for that paperclip, the animated thing.
Yeah.
But, I think that the web is evolving now to you could send out, millions of emails, and you could make money just so easy that technology wasn't as important. But today, it's all about the relationship. If you're not serving people prior to earning money from them, you're not going to last very long. And I think that there's a fine line. Like, I think it was 2009 that Zuckerberg, when he started really customizing people's Facebook, there was a backlash because, people are concerned about privacy. I mean, if we were a total stranger and, I named your dog by name in an ad and I, said some personal things that you didn't tell me, then it would be creepy. And it would still be creepy today. But we live in a different age of permission now. And I think that the key is going to be it's going back to the 90s. We can ask them questions on a survey and then personalize their experience because they're not going to wonder where the information came from.
Yeah.
God, I just had
we can add in and we can add in some things that are commonly available. Like one of the first things that we're going to do with this new version is we're going to customize the letter based on time of day of the service of the page. Like I can customize the copy now and say, Gina, look, I know it's 3 a.m, but even now we can blah, blah, blah. And that's as easy as looking at the clock.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fun, this new way of doing it, I think.
Wow. You know, I didn't even think about the fact that somebody someday is going to, or maybe has already, just force everybody to log in with Facebook and then have the permissions set because everybody's pretty much used to seeing that thing. This thing is going to allow this thing to talk to your page or whatever, and there's a list of things, and people are so used to doing that. Might as well add another thing. It's I'm going to look at your Facebook profile and pull out all this data that we're going to use on the next page, like your dog's name, like the last trip you took, or anything else. I mean, someday somebody's going to do that. And because what I was thinking was we don't have that data. When we're bringing people, we know we brought them from a social site or Google or somewhere else. We know very, very little information. We have to ask them ahead of time on the gateway page, landing page, everything that we're going to use on that next page. But someday I think somebody, and maybe we should just erase this and go ahead and develop it, and pretend like we never had this conversation, because Facebook has all the data on everybody, has it all. And
so,
there's got to be a way.
Hey, Jack, this is Jan. And by the way, Tom, this has been amazing. I'm like, okay, you're not just the grandfather of internet marketing.
Tom,
you're like the guy behind the curtain. And so I'm really getting into this. But this is what occurred to me as y'all are talking. You see, the only reason that stuff works on places like Facebook and G+ and Amazon and all that is because those huge brands have huge authority and trust factor. And when you move onto a smaller site, it's less of a trust factor. And what we're seeing is this huge, mixing happening out in the marketing world. You know, because you're right. You know, I cringe every time I have to one of those things pops up and says that your phone is now going to, be taken over by Facebook or whoever it is. I hate it every time, right? But you've got to want what they have so bad. And, of course, by the same token, lots and lots of people are just as turned off by that. So when they come to a regular page, they're a little, I think, even more suspicious about I don't know that I want you to know this stuff. So there is that, and this made me think of what Tom was talking about at the beginning. If you do it in a way that makes sense to the person going through the process and it fills their need at the moment and you build up trust, it works great.
Mm-hmm.
But if you skip any of those little steps, it's a bomb. So I'd love to hear you talk about, you know, how you're doing that, because I think absolutely people want the personalization. They want you to save them time and energy.
Sure, and I'll give you a great example. In the scheme of things, I would say, just for a technical definition, that Frank Kern is worth 0.1% of what Mark Zuckerberg is worth. Would you say that that's fair?
Mm-hmm.
Or a percentage. Let's say it's 1%. Frank's, you know, doing pretty well. But in the scheme of things, he's way, way smaller than Zuckerberg as far as income and influence. Now, who on this call would say that they trust personally Mark Zuckerberg more than they trust Frank Kern personally? I know I wouldn't say that. I trust Frank better than Mark.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's sort of the point, because we can build trust in our – and by the way, I predict the fall of Facebook for this very reason, because Mark determines who and what we get to see on our own social network. And, yes, it's our social network, not his. As long as he decides what's important for us – that creeps me out. So
yeah,
if you use that example, because Frank was, you know, kind of a universally liked guy, and he deserves it, he has a relationship with us, you know, with us marketers, and I think you can do that on the micro level. So if somebody comes in and you're doing marketing right, so you're serving the needs of the customer, I mean, if you're not doing that, you need to hang up your hat and go home anyway. Technology's not going to help. So somebody comes
right.
in and you're serving their needs with free content or you know, valuable answers prior to the purchase. You can ask for, you know, you can ask for their name. You can intentionally delay asking for their email, because the email is so much less important today than the relationship is. So, yeah, I think you can build the beginnings of a trusting relationship, at least enough to know, at least enough to ask for some data. And every test I've ever done, and that whole having the name on the page, here's the good news. It hasn't weakened. It will always improve your results. There's no case
yeah.
where having the name on the page doesn't improve results. And if you're engaging them in a survey, here's a war story. I did a straight up test against, I'll use some industry terms, but I'll define them. A single panel, three field page is basically what everybody knows as a landing page. You know, name, email, and city, let's say. So that's three fields on a single panel. So we did a test with single panel, three field, and a nine panel, 21 field page. So that was a full-on survey. Not only did we get better data, but we got more clicks, more response from the click. So that thing outperformed the plain old landing page on all fronts. Because today, people like to be engaged. You know, they want to talk about themselves. So, yeah, I think as long as we're doing what we're supposed to be doing anyway when it comes to marketing and serving the customers, I think pulling enough data from the customer is going to be doable. And then it opens up, if we make the argument with the customer, look, you're going to be marketed to one way or the other. We both know it. So if you click yes on this app, you know, and allow us to pull your Facebook data, we can customize your experience for you. I think that can be sold as a benefit, where they knowingly allow us to pull data so that we can customize offers.
Well, on its surface, it's understandable, but when you bring context into the equation, now you know, I mean, what is their interest in the whole thing? You know, is it really, really strong? Is it moderate? Do they know how interested they should be in it? How aware of the problem you're trying to solve for them are they? And that directly dictates how much participation they're going to have in anything that you do, 3 fields, 21 fields, or whatever. And I was just thinking, you know, you were talking about the homeless split testing signs, and it just occurred to me that I was working on a real-world funnel myself back in the 90s. We were designing, most people have seen these over and underpasses on highways that they use for wildlife, right? Seen pictures of them and seen, you know, maybe some live streaming cams that show bears and deer and raccoons and everything going through them. It was no problem to design for the people who were really, really willing. Like a bear, no problem. I'm the biggest thing in the woods. I'll go through this tunnel. Something very skittish like a deer, a prey species, or a cat, who are always wanting to be elusive, bobcats, mountain lions, you can't get them into a funnel very easily. These are literally funnels. They start on the other side of the highway to kind of funnel them into the opening of either the overpass to go over the highway or under the highway. They put up fences and things like that. And cats like to stay in incognito. So when we weren't able to get, the biologists and the people that we were working with, when we realized we weren't able to get really skittish ones, the cats and the deer and the prey species, to take it, you know, and do this, we had to figure out why. What makes them tick? What kind of context can we give them to make them feel safe in making the decision to go over or under this highway, but with the way that we created for them? So with cats, they always like cover. So we gave them cover. We put bushes and trees and all kinds of stuff so that they felt like they had a choice, that they were hiding as they went through the funnel, that nobody could see them. Then, all of a sudden, the number of cats that go through these things skyrockets. And we're like, when? And I'm just now realizing, after all of these decades, all of these years, that I was helping to build funnels in the real world like you were split testing the signs. And it's always about context. So, you know, you've got your bears, you've got your true believers, your evangelists. They'll walk through any tunnel or go over any overpass. They're bold. They're bullish on the future, you know, and they'll do that. And then the other part of your market is people who, in the context that they understand you, who you are, might not be that good. They're going to need some cover. They're going to need some bushes. They're going to need some, you know, reassurance that they're in the right place to do the right thing. And that all comes down to copy and building that relationship and the things that you're proving to them to make them feel safe. I can't believe we both came up, we both have that weird real-world experience.
I would buy that book, Jack. If there was a book, if there was a marketing book on that experiment or on that project, I'd buy it. Because, yeah, that's fascinating.
All right, I'll just write it for you. Maybe somebody else will want it, too.
There you have it. Neat. You know, Jack, I'll share this with you. I learned a profound life lesson from a cat and a dog once on the side of the road. And I was in Tampa and walking somewhere, and I saw a cat and a dog getting ready to fight. And it struck me what happened. It was like this giant life lesson for me, because the cat, you know, they were squared off with their shoulders hunched. You know, you could tell they were about to fight. And the cat kept backing up. He wasn't afraid, but he was backing up like in the seconds prior to the fight. And the dog was advancing forward. And it occurred to me, I came up with this phrase back then. I called it personal pouncing distance. And because cats know they can jump further than dogs. So to get a tactical advantage, what's a cat going to do? He's going to back up. And I was on my way to a bar at the time, and I translated that to, you know, imagine a vicious, belligerent drunk. What's he going to do prior to fighting? He's going to get right in your face. And because he knows he's powerless, he has a very small personal pouncing distance. The really, really dangerous guy is the guy in the back of the bar on his cell phone talking to 6 thugs. I don't know. I just got this. I don't even know if it makes sense, but personal pouncing distance. I came up with that from animals.
CPD. Well, I'm going to incorporate that into my next funnel.
Well, see, that's so perfect because this goes right back to the kind of things that, you know, this is about all of us know this stuff in real life, right? Your personal space, whether you trust the one that's talking to you, all those things that we, all the cues that we read, you know, that we're, the, our animal part of us, they know, okay, you know, this guy is not trustworthy or this person I'm, you know, he's getting too close to my space. And yet as marketers, you know, there's a lot of talk about how to manipulate all this. But what I love is that you're just saying, no, we're not manipulating it. We're just looking at what is it that that person really needs and wants.
Mm-hmm.
How can we enhance
their
experience?
Yeah, we didn't change who the mountain lions were.
Yeah,
we didn't change
exactly.
their agenda. You can't. You can't change a wild thing to do and act the way you want it to.
And
it's going to be a mountain lion. It's going to be a wolverine. It's going to be those things. And if you want to protect them, even if they're better, if their nature is to walk in the direction of harm and we need to protect them, we can't treat them. We can't set them aside and say, look, I know you're a wolverine, but I need you to be a bear right now. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to get smashed by this car. He's still going to be a wolverine. He's probably going to bite you while you're trying to tell him that. So, yeah, I really love where it's going because I've always wanted to live in a world where the pressure wasn't on us as marketers to be so hardcore salesy, you know. And in the 2000s and late 90s, that's really where it came from. Who was the best salesperson and how do we measure that? Anybody who could bully somebody else into buying something, bullying them, making them feel bad, preying on human nature to kind of a sick degree, you know, the evil uses of NLP. And the people lauded that. We gave those people trophies. We gave those people standing ovations at marketing conferences. But I never felt good about that, and I know most people around me never felt good about that because most people aren't like that. They aren't that kind of a bloodthirsty marketer. They need to have a little bit more balance in their life. They need to be able to know they're treating people well while they're making a good amount of money. And I love that it's going. I love that we're having more conversations like this.
Yeah, and I think you know, the short version, Jack, is you know I would have to stand up in that list. I mean, I sold good products, and it was always in bad industries. You know, we went from there to you know we did another 40 or 50 million selling business opportunity. Now all of our stuff always worked. But as time went by, this is why I quit 3 years ago. As time went by, you know, we had to be honest people in a really slimy business. You know, there's work from home and, you know, at the high end, you know, where every launch you do is $1 million, you're competing with some people who just are not afraid to lie. And I think the conversation needs to have two compartments. The one is if you take all the technology away, is at your core, are you interested in making somebody's life better, right? And lots of people are, right? So as long as that hurdle is overcome, and that's where I mean, you know, I'm too old for kid stuff anymore. I have to help people. So if you're not helping people, you need to quit. It's just that simple. But then on the other, like on a whole other you know, stage, we're talking about techniques and technology, right? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, here's something that not a lot of people talk about. Marketers have a barrier, too. You know, it's, you know, go hug your favorite marketer because we have a problem. And that is, like, buyer's resistance or what's the word? It's, I don't know the word off the top of my head, but let's call it momentum's evil twin. The thing that drives people to stay where they are, whether they're in it's that cat on the wrong side of the bridge, Jack. You know, mm-hmm. or it's that cat that's been going across the road his whole life. He's going to go across the road today, even though the cars are going twice as fast. Right? He
yep.
is going to become roadkill if he keeps doing it the way he's been doing it. Right? But he has this primal drive to keep doing it the way he's been doing it. So we do have to use technology, and we like it, Jack. Perfect example with that bridge, right? That bridge was a piece of technology that was designed to help people, to help animals, right?
Right.
And you had to use
right.
technological tricks to get them to cross it, So I think that that's the noble plate for you know, improvements in selling.
Absolutely.
Because people's natural state is to stay where they are, and where they are usually isn't going to help them very much.
Then they do it whether even if they're miserable. Right? I mean, you would think that somebody who was miserable would do anything they could to change their state. And I did, but I don't know how long I put off the decision because of my wanting to keep the natural way of things in order. Who knows how long how much sooner I could have gotten started had I not been so timid. I don't know. I wasn't monitoring myself in that way that I know I do now. But it's absolutely true. If you're, and that's where it gets kind of dicey. I think the people's bad examples of this stuff is that people who don't care about helping other people, and they just care about, purely just making money, they listen to these calls. They're listening right now. They're listening to all the webinars where these great tactics with the understanding that everybody here should want to help people and do good in the world with what they're doing and sell well. Those people just are all around us, and they always are. And they use these techniques without regard. But they're very, very – this is very, very powerful insight for everybody. Our main audience is a crowd that wants to do good by other people, wants to help people. And those are the only people we're talking to right now. Everybody else, that's your decision. Those are your things you'll have to live with the rest of your life. And I encourage you one more time not to use this for evil because this is extremely powerful stuff.
I mean, I've always looked at things from a holistic view. One kind of gritty way to put it is if people didn't have base desires, if people didn't have you know dirty thoughts, we wouldn't have video on the internet. Let's face it, if porn wasn't driving video wouldn't have gotten developed. So there's. Trust me, I'm not going to get into the porn good or bad debate, but that it's there, it drove online credit cards, it drove video. So I guess good things happen because people are at their core good. So, sometimes these naughty things drive technology for the rest of us, so that's cool. But, at the base, people are good. And, I have a friend, Mike Albanese, who's he's a debater. He's a very, very smart guy, and he loves to debate. And, he made me defend that position that people are basically good from a scientific standpoint. And I have really one sentence that proves it. We evolved and lasted 50 million years. Any questions? Right? If we were out to get each other, it never would have happened. At the core, and here's another thing. Here's another war story for you. I had the good fortune back in the, I guess it was the very early 2000s, 2001, 2002, where I got to turn down dinner with the president. And it was because I had an opinion that they wanted, that they liked, and that was they were proposing an email tax at the time, and I agreed with it because they said they were going to keep spam out of the inbox. Now, we all know now that would have been impossible. But I was going somewhere. That's one of my challenges with my ADD. I have a thought, and sometimes it just flies right out of my head.
Well, I've said that why you turned them down.
Well,
it's still the
we turned them down
right?
because, yes, yeah. Well, really, I was probably just driven to introduce that brag into a sentence. But they wanted maybe if I tell that story, it'll come back to me. But they wanted to take away all the spam somehow. And only allow one or two emails in the inbox that were commercial. And I looked at that and said it was a great idea. And it turned out, long story short, that they had a deal with Excite, AOL, and it might have been Yahoo, but it was early days, so I don't even know if Yahoo was there yet. And it turned out that it wasn't the federal government, it was the party that was putting the deal together. And back then, I was a lot more liberal than I am today. Really, if somebody says Democrat or Republican to me, I correct them and say American instead. But that's not to talk politics. And you
well,
know, look,
I mean,
guys,
you've already done,
no idea
you've
where
already
I'm
done
going.
Porn, and I'm just waiting for religion to come in for the trifecta. And then we will have a very good Traffic Masters.
Well, you know what? Maybe I'll like consciously think my way out of not doing that one. But you know, no, I'll just say that my views aren't they're in the top three. How about that?
There you go.
But yeah, I'm sorry, guys. It's what you get when you talk to an ADD guy. Sometimes he just forgets entirely. But
I want to jump back in for a minute. I noticed on your Facebook profile that you are interested in speaking at the Impact event.
I am, yes.
Well, good for you that you're talking to the head of the key influencers team then, right?
I did not know that. Now, Gina, here's a fun war story that you'll remember. So Gina had me speak at one of her events a while back, and I was so proud because I came and I was going to talk about one topic, and I got there, and, like, I'm sort of known as a guy who does a lot of tests, like a lot of split testing. So you remember what I did, Gina?
I sure do.
I handed out a slip of paper the day before I was supposed to speak, and I asked people what they wanted to hear about. So I split test. I split test the crowd, and it turns out they wanted to hear about something entirely different than what I wanted to talk about. So I talked about what they wanted to hear.
And didn't really have an offer that worked for who the audience was and what it is they wanted to hear. So Tom miraculously made up an offer on the fly shortly before he got on the stage. And, man, he did so well in sales. So much better than
I might have been number one or number two.
I think you were.
Yeah, and it was what they needed.
It really was.
I think it was, if I recall, it was network marketing. It wasn't a network marketing event at all. And I don't even think the promoters knew that they were that full with network marketers
in
the crowd.
We had no clue. And Tom and I delivered the program together.
Yeah, and the people who bought, you know, I'd like to think they got what they, you know, they really got some help. I remember there were some nice success stories out of that. And you had an Android phone, Gina.
I did.
Gina, I think Gina was the only person in our community that had, like, Android version 1. Like, this was back in what, in 2008?
2007.
Yeah, Gina had an Android, and it was called a Google phone at the time.
I think it had just come out. I think I'd had that phone for less than 2 months at the time of the event.
Yeah, and she was talking to it. And, you know, voice technology was very young back then, but it worked.
It sure did. Anyway,
she needed
so
a wheelbarrow to carry it on
when
stage
we get
with
off.
Her. But.
Check your Facebook
what was that,
when Jack? We get off, because you are definitely invited to be a part of the social media and publicity team, and I am working on getting you the invite.
Well, Gina, let's... I know that we're on a public call, but I'm working on this custom tech. Maybe we can use some of it to help promote Impact, and we can talk about
God,
that.
Oh, God, would that be amazing.
Yeah, and I love Ken, so, yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. There was a secret closed-door meeting about 6-7 years ago where you know those like sales pitches that say we gathered 30 of the top minds for a, you know, closed door session that the public would never see?
Yeah.
Well, we really did one of those sessions, and the public never did see it. And Ken was there. That's where I met Sean Casey, actually.
Oh wow! I didn't even know that.
Yeah, that was maybe 7-8 years ago. Time flies, doesn't it?
Wow.
Really does.
It does.
Wow.
Well, let's talk about your tech. Since nobody in the world, you kind of leaked something in the very beginning of this call and said that there's only three people or so that know about this thing. So I love to break news, and it's always good for business to do so. So tell us more about what you're working on. And what I picture is it's the culmination of a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about the whole day, which is, you know, the gateway to stuff, the behaviors, all of that kind of thing. You must have had an idea that we're going to be bringing this stuff back, but only with video. Can you say any more?
I can, and I'll let you in on a little. I don't know if you've heard any beeps on your end during the call, but
no.
I've gotten three different phone calls on my cell, which is currently held up to my ear, and I suspect that one or more of them were from partners. But let me say this. We've figured out a way to put lots of different variables into a live video. So a sales pitch, let's say we're talking about dog food, and the sales pitch changes, the video sales pitch changes from, hello, friend, you know, if you have a dog, we have really good dog food for you, right? That's the old way. The new way is, you know, hello, Gina, because you have a German Shepherd, he has special needs, and we have the perfect dog food for your German Shepherd. Even if he's, you know, moves around a lot and you have a traveling lifestyle. Do you still travel a lot, Gina?
We don't. We've been stationary for about 4 years.
That shows how long it's been.
On the road.
Shows how long it's been since we've hung out. But the sentence can change to, you know, address the person. We can talk about their specific dog in this example. And we can talk about how it relates to their specific area. And we can, you know, there's other stuff like neat things. Like we can say, even though it's raining outside right now, this is a great time to get dog food. Because all we have to do is look at the National Weather Service. I mean, it's going to be some fun stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
We're going to have to work hard to not have it be creepy, but we have some ways on how to do it.
Well, and no matter what, somebody's going to make it creepy. You know, people are always pushing the limits, right? So,
yeah.
Again,
use
your own risk and at your own discretion.
Yeah. See,
so
think
where do we find out more about
point.
That? Or mainly, where does everybody get into Tom Bell's circle of influence? What's the best place to go these days?
Well, I appreciate the question, and I'll answer them one by one. The software is at least 2 months away. It may show up as data on the impact event. Who knows? But it's about 2 months away. My personal email is inspectorprofit@gmail.com. There's six ways to spell that. I have all six, but the main one is inspectorprofit@gmail. And I guess here's what I do. Here's what I do for a living. There's no way to say this. All right, I'm gonna take the easy way out. Gina, which percentile would you say I am in the sales copy world?
The top quarter of a percent.
I'm glad somebody said it besides me. I've written, you know, over $100 million worth of copy for myself, probably another $50 million for other people, and that's because I don't write as a hired gun. But I have been doing that, so that's something that I do. I do business strategy and tactics. Sort of an expert at merchant processing relations, which at the high end is a pretty important skill. So, you know, that's what I'm doing. And I love to build businesses as a partner so that I can be in a lot of different businesses. So if there's anybody on the call that, you know, that's interested in any of that, you have my email.
And let me just add to that, Tom, if I could for a minute. You know, so much of what I teach today would not be what I teach today if it hadn't been for the lessons I learned about business and marketing from Tom Bell. Tom, you don't even realize how much you have impacted just how I think about both business strategy and marketing. Your brilliance is just mind-boggling. So, guys,
that's humbling,
I really invite you, InspectorProfit@gmail.com. Get into a conversation with Tom if you want to take your business to the next level. If you're just dabbling, don't waste his time.
Yeah, well, I'm fairly
expensive. Picture it this way. Yeah. Well, and it's not to say, you know, I know that the software thing will be something you'll want to talk about and lead people into a nice, gentle, and honest funnel for at that point. So that's why I said it, but I also said it because I'm always trying to get people to think, if you were dropped in the middle of the wilderness and somebody walked by you and he really looked like he knew what he was doing, he had furs on his back, he knows how to trap, he knows how to get food, he looks like he's been there for quite a long time and you don't know anything, tomorrow you could be dead. You're going to track that guy. You're going to follow him around and hope he doesn't turn around and kill you, so you'll keep your distance, but you're going to follow him and find out how he got the food, how he got... That's why I wanted to get people, you know, just somewhere around you so that they would follow up and go and just watch the Tom Bell in the wild. You know, mm-hmm. Notice what he does.
Oh,
notice
God,
what he thinks.
Jack.
Notice the things that. Yeah.
Jack, you did it by accident. You remember about 15 minutes ago where I completely lost what I was going to say?
Ah, yes.
It came back, and here it is. I don't know if we're going over on length, but this was worth saying. Okay, it had to do with email, and here's what it was. I had the good fortune to be in Fiji many years ago, at Tony Robbins' private thing, and I got to sit down for an entire day with a full-out spammer. And I've always been a First Amendment activist when it comes to email, because I've managed the sending of over 1.5 billion emails. So I got into politics a little, because the Constitution guarantees us the right to communicate with people in an honest way. So that's opt-in email, and I really got to see how the spam business worked because I spent a day analyzing this guy's business. So, you know, I got to see behind the curtain. I knew his costs. I knew what his problems were, because I've never sent a single spam, ever. But I got to see what this guy thinks about, what he spends money on. And at the time, we were both grossing about the same amount of money. Me with my opt-in, him with his spam. And after I analyzed his entire business, it was very clear that I was more profitable and making more money by doing it right. And I'll take that, we're getting to the end, so why doesn't somebody wrap it up?
Ah, man, that's the thing. This is like the season finale of The Walking Dead or something. You're like, I've got to wait till fall to find out what the hell happens.
It'll still show up in the recording. We can go over time and it'll still show up. So go ahead, Tom.
Okay, so here it is. Without bragging, I've been at the absolute top of CPA marketing. I've been at the absolute top of ClickBank, the whole multi-million-dollar launch crowd. And I can tell you with authority, because I know that doing it right makes you more money. And if I have an extra minute, I'll give like a weird story to prove it.
Go for
that's
it.
Not
absolutely.
Even,
I
that's
love
not even
that
internet marketing.
Weird story. Excellent.
I used to be, you know, some people may know that I used to be a cocaine addict when I was 20 years old. And I would go to these spots, in New York City, where they would have, an M16 gun and an apartment. I mean, the whole thing you'd see on TV. Now, here's a business lesson that they should teach in Harvard. Let's look at two guys. One guy, is it going to keep going, Gina?
It's going to keep going.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's look at two guys in the crack business, right? One guy is on the corner. He's selling fake crack out of vials that really is ivory soap, and he's making a living. The other guy is in the apartment with the scale, and he's selling kilos at a time. So the guy that's selling the fake stuff if you looked at it from a business standpoint, he has zero marginal costs. So whenever somebody gives him $20, he's really not spending any money because his stuff is fake. And you have the other guy who's selling wholesale. He's paying like $15,000 a key, blah, blah, blah. He's only making about 10% margins because he's paying for the apartment. He's paying for the armed guards. He's paying for everything else. So he's only making 10%. Now, Jack and Gina, who do you think drives the BMW?
The guy with the apartment.
The 10%er.
Right. And there's only one possible explanation for that. Repeat business. You don't buy soap twice. So in the BizOp world, you can trick people. You can trust me. I can write copy. I can sell about anything. You
Brilliant
can trick
story.
People into buying once, but you can't get them to buy twice. So if you sell quality products, even if your margins are lower, you make more money. That was the story.
I can't wait to write the headlines to tease this show on social media and everywhere else. I've got so much to work with, and I don't know which one to choose. That's the only problem. This is awesome stuff, man. Great.
Well, both of you have my number. You know, give me a call if you're working. I mean, and here's a secret. Here's like a secret that would kill a career. I really like this stuff. So is that going to get, you know, clients to, you know, get me to do it for free? No, I still got bills to pay. But I really
right.
I don't do this stuff for nothing, and I do. Anybody that's met me outside of a seminar will tell you.
Yeah. Tom just can't get enough of this stuff. Can't get enough of it. And that's why he's so good, right? He eats it, breathes it, sleeps it every day. He can't walk into a store without getting marketing lessons from the store. It's too funny. Or giving marketing lessons to the store is usually more the case these days.
Oh, God. The one last story, because I can't help myself. Cialdini, who did the Influence book, did
mm-hmm.
a test with he wanted to prove reciprocity. So the scientific test that he used was he used waitresses in a restaurant, and it was mint. So the control was no mint, right? And for a month, the waitresses gave no mint to their customer, and they measured their tips. And then they had them give one mint, you know, with the check. And the tips went up a little. And then they had them give one mint for each person at the table. And the tips went up a tiny little bit more. And then they had them give one mint and turn to walk away and then remember to give a mint to everybody else because they're special. Their tips doubled. And this
wow.
was over a month. So it's not a fluke. It was a thing. I can't tell you how many waitresses I've said that to. And I've come back a month later. I've yet to find one that's done it.
Oh, geez.
They could double their tips.
So easy. So easy.
Yeah. And I mean, I've never waited tables, but I'm pretty sure tips account for like all of your money, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So
pretty
any waitress
much.
Could double their pay just from that.
Well, guys,
wow.
if Tom can give you tips like that to double your pay as a waitress, just imagine what he can do to double your pay in your business. Again, InspectorProfit, P-R-O-F-I-T, @gmail.com to get in touch with the legendary Tom Bell. And, Tom, we will definitely be talking about the Impact event in the coming weeks.
Perfect. I appreciate the time, y'all.
Thank you so much, and we will be back next week, same time, same place, with another episode of Traffic Masters. Have a great week, everybody. Remember that April 1st through April 12th, DU is officially on spring break. Woohoo! First break of 2015. All calls are canceled from the 1st through the 12th of April. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Traffic Masters, from traffic to conversion to business success.